Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, it's the game within the game. Which Super Bowl commercials will score big with fans? Who has the most to gain, and who has the most to lose? We'll preview the Battle of the Brands. Also this morning, what would you do if given a chance to change the trajectory of the future by traveling back to the past? Could you prevent World War III? Debut author Matt Simons talks about his end-of-the-earth science fiction military thriller book series. And we have easy and delicious recipes for your game day gathering from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, February 7th, 2025. Before we get too deep into all of the Super Bowl stuff, today is National Wear Red Day, which is observed on the first Friday of February, which is American Heart Month, February being American Heart Month because you've got Valentine's Day and matters of the heart and all of that. So the Heart Association co-ops February as American Heart Month, the first Friday, Wear Red Day, meant to raise awareness about heart disease, the leading cause of death for women in the U.S. You can visit goredforwomen.org for more information. So I want to make sure that we get that in on this first Friday of February. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. A much calmer morning today than it was yesterday with all of the weather issues, the ice that we got overnight Wednesday into Thursday that caused all the issues yesterday morning. Even an ODOT salt truck crashed yesterday morning. Happened in Cleveland on all of the icy roads. The salt truck hit a guardrail on I-77 at East 14th Street while treating the highway there. So nobody was safe, even a salt truck. But there were several other accidents in the area because of the slick conditions as well. But fortunately, no reports of any injuries. Much calmer today. We don't have to worry about that. What we do have to worry about today, because every day you do have to have a doom and gloom story. Some world is coming to an end. Woe is us. Whatever will we do? Society is doomed story, right? Yesterday, it was the ice and you know, the icy roads and the freezing rain and all of that. That was, you know, that was the doom and gloom story. Today, there is this story. New imagery from NASA shows a large asteroid that could impact the Earth in 2032. 2032. The clock is ticking, people. NASA said this is the only asteroid with a probability of impact above 1%. So, just a little over 1% likelihood that this asteroid is going to impact Earth. But it's the only asteroid out there that has a probability of over 1%. So obviously, we're worried about this. It is today's doom and gloom story. By the way, the probability number actually changes from one day to the next. But the Jet Propulsion Laboratory at NASA said 2024 YR4, that is the name of the asteroid, 2024 YR4, is on the risk list because scientists found a gradual increase in its impact probability in the months since they discovered its existence. So it's been trending upward in terms of its likelihood of impacting Earth, and 2032 is the doomsday year, apparently. So that's what we have to look forward to. That gives us, what, seven more years, and this asteroid is going to hit Earth and we're all going to die. That is the doom and gloom story of the day. Let's see what else is going on here. Not only the Super Bowl, I mean, that is in our immediate future, but Valentine's Day is next weekend, so you want to start thinking about what you're going to do with your special someone for Valentine's Day. One estimate predicts that people will spend a record $27.5 billion on their sweethearts this year. $27.5 billion. That would barely beat out the record, the current record, $27.4 billion spent on Valentine's Day in 2020. This is according to numbers from the National Retail Federation and Prosper Insights and Analytics. The top places that people will spend their money are online, followed by department stores and florists. Those are the top three business categories that will see the biggest uptick in sales on Valentine's Day. Online, retailers, department stores, and florists. It says here a little more than half of consumers say that they will celebrate Valentine's Day this year. And the way I read that statistic is you're going to buy something for your Valentine. Don't expect to get anything in return because only half of people are celebrating. So that you'll get something. Don't expect anything in return. That's the bottom line. By the way, next week, Valentine's Day, not the only thing to talk about next week. Cedar Point is hiring for the 2025 season. Thousands of positions are open. The park plans to hire 7,000 workers to fill seasonal jobs, including ride operators, of course, but also lifeguards, food services, security, and more. Positions range in pay from $13 to $17 an hour. And a week-long hiring blitz will be held at the Cedar Point Hiring and Training Center in Sandusky beginning February 15th. Oh, no. So I guess not next week. It's the week after next. My apologies. So right after Valentine's Day. February 15th through the 22nd. You can also apply online by visiting jobs.cedarfair.com. So I mentioned that as well. It is that time of year preparing for the new season at America's Roller Coast. Let's see. So obviously the Super Bowl is on Sunday. How are you going to spend the rest of your weekend? Maybe you'll take in a movie. Or maybe you're not interested in the Super Bowl. What do you do if you're not going to watch the big game? Maybe you'll take in a movie. According to a new survey, 2,000 movie fans, Forrest Gump is America's favorite movie. Forrest Gump, our favorite of all time. Forrest Gump, 17% of those in the survey put Forrest Gump as their top pick. 15% chose The Wizard of Oz. So The Wizard is tied with Titanic, which also garnered 15% of the vote. So those are the top three favorite movies of all time, according to this this survey. Different generations have their own faves. Gen Zers love Shrek and Toy Story. The Harry Potter series scores highly with millennials. Gen Xers and Gen Zers love Star Wars. Baby boomers more likely to pick The Godfather as their favorite film. So you account for all of those. It just seems like Forrest Gump, Wizard of Oz, and Titanic are the ones that are fairly popular across the board. Not number one on anyone's list, but popular across the board. So if you're looking for a movie that all ages can agree on, there you go. The average American says that they have watched their favorite movie 38 times. I don't know if I've, first of all, I don't know if you had to ask me to name my favorite movie of all time. I don't know if I could do it. I mean, there's so many good movies out there. I don't know if I could name one favorite movie, but even my favorite movie or movies, I don't think I've watched 38 times. That's pretty amazing. And by the way, I'll mention this. If you are watching the Super Bowl this weekend, obviously the game will run a little bit late, as it always does. There's always a push to make the day after the Super Bowl, Super Bowl Monday, a national holiday. Don't think that's going to happen. So if you have to get up and go to work on the day after the Super Bowl, Starbucks has you covered. The coffee chain is going to give you a free boost of caffeine to help you get through the day after the Super Bowl in the form of a tall, hot or ice brewed coffee, 12-ounce hot or cold brew. All you need to do to take advantage of the free boost of caffeine is be a member of Starbucks Rewards. So you join their rewards program, you can get an extra shot of caffeine for your Monday after the Super Bowl, just in case you need a little extra motivation on the day after the big game as you head back to work. So there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny today with a high around 30, partly to mostly cloudy tonight, low in the middle 20s. The Seneca County Sheriff's Office says a man recently arrested for unlawful sexual conduct with a minor was wanted on the same charge in Indiana. The Sheriff's Office was contacted by the Warsaw, Indiana Police Department for assistance in locating and apprehending the 46-year-old. Seneca County deputies located William R. Stevens at the Seneca County Probation Office, and he was placed into custody pursuant to the out-of-state arrest warrant. The sheriff's office said while being arrested, Stevens assaulted a deputy and attempted to flee the scene, but was apprehended. He's now facing a charge of felonious assault on a peace officer, in addition to the two charges of unlawful sexual conduct with a minor. Get more in this story on our website. Late fees will once again be tacked on to mailed Ohio Turnpike notices.
If you don't pay your missed toll within 30 days, a $5 late fee will be assessed. Then starting February 10th, if you wait longer than 90 days, you may be prevented from registering your vehicle and could receive a collection letter from the Attorney General's office. The fees were suspended or put on hold last year after our series of stories on turnpike confusion and drivers missing the new Swanson Toll Plaza.
WTOL 11's Tim Miller reporting. The Hancock County Fair is offering a new program for children and adults with developmental disabilities called Shining in the Show Ring. The fair says this unique opportunity provides individuals with special needs an experience to know what it's like to exhibit an animal at the fair. Individuals will work with junior fair exhibitors and their animals to participate in an alternative livestock show to share what they've learned. The first annual Hancock County Shining in the Show Ring will be held on Saturday, August 30th in the Wrecker Arena at the Hancock County Fairgrounds. Get more details in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Our cover story this morning, it is the game within the game. In fact, for some folks, it's the reason they tune in. Which Super Bowl commercials will score big with fans? Who has the most to gain? Who has the most to lose? The advertising competition. Dave Schaffner is with us this morning from the Spot Bowl with a preview of the Battle of the Brands. Dave, first of all, what is the Spot Bowl, and how does this work?
Sure, yeah. Well, Spot Bowl, we're an ad agency here in Pennsylvania called Pavone Group, and what we did back in 2004 was create Spot Bowl because we know that 50% of the people are watching just for the ads, so we wanted to give them a voice. It's America's largest Super Bowl commercial poll. We put all of the spots up there, including the pre-released ones, and America can vote for their favorites.
And that's basically how it's ranked. When people, you know, from the people's vote, this is entirely from the fans based on their reaction to the various commercials.
100%. And we wanted to make it easy too. It's just a simple thumbs up and thumbs down for each spot.
Now, is this, I know historically this has been the Super Bowl of advertising, not just the pinnacle of professional football, but the pinnacle for advertisers as well. Obviously, the advertising game in the past 20 years has changed dramatically. Is this still as big as it has always been for the advertisers?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, I think if anything, it's even bigger because, you know, the audience for the game has grown a little bit each year. I mean, last year we saw 123 million people watching the Super Bowl. That's a record. We're expecting upwards of that this year. So the audience has grown. The bar is consistently raised for what consumers are expecting from these ads in terms of star power, in terms of quality and entertainment value. So, yeah, I think it's as big a game as ever.
And the point I've heard also made is that, to your point, it becomes maybe even more important because there are very few things anymore that unite the country as much as the Super Bowl. I mean, it's like half of all television sets are going to be tuned in when you add in all of the people who will be viewing in groups. I mean, it's like two-thirds of the country is going to be watching this one thing, and that just doesn't happen anymore these days.
It doesn't. And, you know, it's not only do you have so many people watching, you have them, they're watching the commercials, right? It's the only television event where we're not skipping past the commercials, hovering over that skip button on YouTube. You know, like it's just a phenomenon like no other. And it's really a big opportunity, you know, for a lot of brands.
So as you mentioned, and this has been true the past several years, many advertisers will pre-release their Super Bowl commercials, or at least snippets of them, almost like trailers for the commercials. Some companies will put out, some advertisers, to get the most mileage out of their Super Bowl ads. And even the ones that we haven't seen, we have heard a lot about. So based on what we already know of what we will see on Sunday, who are the top contenders in your mind?
Yeah, you know, I think, and you're right, we've got, I'm looking at some pre-releases just this morning. We've got 25 of the ads already up on Spotball. That's about half of the lineup that you'll see on Sunday already up on the website for pregame voting. And you know, I think from what I've seen so far, you know, I like that Budweiser's bringing back the Clydesdales. So we're going to get a familiar story there. I think one of the, if you like sort of dark humor, you'll like Totino's pizza roll spot. Tim Robinson, very funny comedian in that.
Okay.
That takes a very dark twist. Won't spoil it, but you can watch that one on the Spot Bowl site right now as well.
Who has the most to gain from the Super Bowl advertising, the battle of the brands? Who is staking the most and has the biggest potential for upside, do you think?
I think it's the rookies, right? I always look every year. One of my passions is, you know, who are the first-time advertisers in the game? This year we have 18 first-time advertisers, Super Bowl rookies. And that's close to a Spot Bowl era record. We saw 22 rookies about 4 years ago in the game. So I like the fact that we're seeing so many first-timers, brands like Häagen-Dazs, Angel Soft. I love the Angel Soft spot, by the way. They haven't released it, but it's right before halftime, and it's sort of designed to give everyone a bathroom break because no one knows when to take their bathroom break during the game.
Okay.
So apparently the concept of the spot is it's giving America a bathroom break. I don't know.
That's a cute idea. The reason I ask is because folks may remember, this has been quite a while ago now, but when the dot-coms dominated the Super Bowl, and it turned out to be a big bust, and many of them, you know, actually within a year or so were gone. There were a lot of reasons for that, but there were questions about, you know, are these companies really ready for prime time and ready to spend all of the kind of money that it took to advertise? And yet there are others that come out of nowhere. I think of E-Trade, for example, that was, you know, came out of nowhere and leveraged their Super Bowl ads and became, you know, hugely well known. So we talk about the team, the advertisers with the most to gain. Who has the most to lose in this year's ad game?
Well, I mean, I think it's the same ones, and if not the rookies, then at least the smaller brands, like you mentioned. There's, you know, $8 million investment is maybe not a lot of money for someone like Anheuser-Busch or Coca-Cola. you know, or Doritos, but that can be a sizable portion of your annual marketing budget if you're a smaller company. Yeah. We do see a lot of smaller companies in the game every year. And so they have a lot more riding on this. I think, you know, for them, they can certainly expect to see a bump in sales or awareness after a Super Bowl ad because of so many people are watching. But the more pressure is on them because they have to really back that with an ongoing marketing campaign. That's really the secret with this. A Super Bowl ad is not a magic bullet for any brand. You have to be smart about it, and you have to kind of back it with part of a larger campaign.
Yeah. And so you've got not only the $8 million to buy the time, you've got the cost of producing a commercial that will be memorable and will stand out amongst all of the heavy hitters. And then, as you mentioned, the money to back it up with an ongoing campaign to follow up. So a lot of money beyond just the dollars that go into the commercial itself. Although I thought it was kind of interesting, the Bud Light seems to be staking a lot on trying to recapture their market share. Obviously, they had some bad press over the past couple of years that they're trying to, you know, reestablish themselves as kind of the go-to beer for football fans. So they've actually got quite a bit riding on this as well, I think.
They do, you know, and they're back this year with Post Malone and Shane Gillis, a very funny spot. Peyton Manning has a cameo in that. You can see that one on the Spot Bowl site, yeah. Pre-released as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think for Anheuser-Busch, they've got an amazing product lineup that really lends itself to some great storytelling. We're going to see some great stories from them in the game, including a Stella Artois spot, Michelob Ultra also there for the Anheuser-Busch team.
Again, Dave Schaffner is with us from the Spot Bowl with a preview of the Battle of the Brands. Now, how and when will the results be tabulated for all of this? Will we know, like, right after the game?
We'll know. Well, you can see, actually, there's a leaderboard on Spot Bowl where you can see up-to-the-minute rankings as America is voting. So you can see very the up-to-the-minute leaderboard. But our polls will close on Monday at noon Eastern. So at noon Eastern on Monday, we will know our Spot Bowl 22 champion.
And Dave will be with us again on Monday morning to share reaction from the game and the way the late voting is going. So we look forward to that. Again, Dave Schaffner with the Spot Bowl. We have it linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. Dave, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let me ask you a question. Think about this. What would you do if you were given a chance to escape a terrible existence in the present, to travel back to the past? And if you did, how would you handle knowing what no one else knows about the trajectory of what is to come? Could you prevent World War III? Would you inadvertently accelerate it? These are some of the questions raised in the debut science fiction military thriller End of Earth book series by Matt Simons. Matt, it is an intriguing premise. Where did the idea for this come from?
It came from, well, living and going, well, what if I could start over? How much would I change? And then right before there's the tensions before Russia invaded Ukraine, when I started writing the series, like, oh, this could get interesting. Mm-hmm. And then before I published Russia invaded Ukraine, and almost feels like we're on that trajectory. So what would you do if you could change everything? That's why I want to ask this question.
Yeah.
In A Battle for Tomorrow, the first one, mm-hmm. we get that question. And the sequel, Family Obligations, we see the consequences. And this month, when book three comes out, things get crazy.
It
with
is
a war for the stars.
It is a question I think many of us have wondered, maybe not in this context, but it is fascinating nonetheless. What do you think most of us will do? What do your characters do given this chance to avoid or even change what appears on the surface to kind of be their ultimate fate?
Well, you try to change the small things, but those don't have enough of an impact. See, then you try to do something bigger, something amazing, and that has larger repercussions that ripple throughout everything. And suddenly you're on a much darker path in your life. And that's what really ends up happening. But I don't want to give away too much. Things get crazy in this third book, The War for the Stars.
I thought it was interesting. Review from Publishers Weekly Book Life says that this offers a soldier's eye look into the horrors of combat and the transformation of young people into weapons. As we mentioned, it's not just science fiction. It's a military thriller. Has this always been sort of a fascination of yours?
Yes. Yeah. My grandfather served in three wars, and I always was fascinated with the history of it all. However, I never personally served, so all the information I had to interview other people. The singer of my metal band at the time was an ex-Marine who served in Afghanistan and Iraq, and he gave me a lot of the more accurate descriptions of stuff.
You bring up a good point. As you mentioned, you are a musician by trade. I mean, that's what you have long done. What made you decide to venture into this form of art?
Just the need to create. I had that story for years, and I just decided one day during COVID, you know, I'm just going to start typing it and make it happen. And that's where it all came from, really.
So talk a little bit about the synopsis. You mentioned the first two books are out now, the third one coming out this month. So talk a little bit about the premise here and kind of take us through the basics of the story.
All right. Well, the first book, Battle for Tomorrow, the main character, Jason, it's all told through his eyes in the first book,
mm-hmm.
where nukes strike couple of cities and he is drafted into the Third World War, and you get experience, and as intense things get, he goes through trauma after trauma, and then bomb goes off and he suddenly wakes up and he's back in middle school. So he's seeing friends that he lost, all this different things, like, oh, I can make a difference, but it's not a switch you just turn off after fighting for your life. And he makes mistakes that then ripple through into the next book, where we follow another character who he hands off some knowledge to, who then basically it's just all consequences from the first book and the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one, everything has accelerated beyond his control. And he's trying to take back some understanding of what has happened.
So do you see this as an inevitable outcome of life's trajectory? I mean, in this case, World War III, is that the inevitable outcome, or is it preventable knowing what you know with a second chance?
Well, the direction the war is preventable, who we end up pointing our anger at isn't. Essentially, what will happen is, as one thing that is inevitable for us in general is Earth is going to end one day. And mm-hmm. this is the individual stories of how we deal with these existentialist crisis that we can't stop, but we try to find the little bits of humanity in between on the way to inevitability. That's what I try to capture, at least.
Really fascinating case study. And again, when we talk about it being a science fiction military thriller, maybe to a certain extent, we should categorize this as a psychological examination as well.
Honestly, yes, that's a great point. I probably should have put that in synopsis.
But I have to ask. You know, again, when we talk about all of these really weighty subjects, we're talking about the end of the world and turning good people into killing machines, and World War III, the end of the world, and all of this. Is there anything uplifting? I mean, do we go in? I don't want to give people the idea that you're going to go in and be depressed when you get through these books.
Oh, no, I understand. There's a lot of very human moments. The overall is a little dark, but the important thing is the small individual moments, the friendships that get you through these dark moments, the existential one. But then you have your friends, you have these small moments of kindness and humanity to help one another out. Even though everything is crazy, everything's on fire,
yeah,
you're still there as a person trying to help another person. And those are the little things that shine through, just a little moment of humanity after a loss. There's always that. Because who hasn't suffered from loss at some point? All of us have suffered some kind of loss.
Yeah.
So it's about the little things, too.
Again, Matt Simons is the author of the debut science fiction military thriller, kind of a psychological examination, as we were saying, the End of the Earth book series. Do you have a website in conjunction with the books we can guide folks to?
Yeah, yeah. Everything's on Amazon, but my website is nightstandmatt.com.
Really fascinating books. Matt, thanks very much for taking the time. Certainly best of luck with the books.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Hope you have a good day, sir.
So obviously all attention on the Super Bowl this weekend, but before we get to Sunday, Trojans basketball on the road this weekend at Whitmer tonight and at Elida tomorrow. Action you will hear right here on WFIN, of course. Meanwhile, Findlay High School hockey wraps up their regular season at St. Francis this evening and hosting rival Bowling Green for senior night tomorrow. Earlier this week on the Coach's Corner, John Marshall spoke with the head coach of the Trojans, Ben Patey.
12-18-1, 4-3 in the Northwest Hockey Conference. It's been a tough schedule with lots of games against some very, very good competition.
Yeah, it's been a very tough schedule. But we actually do that on purpose. We want to be the best. We've got to play the best. And just kind of reflecting and looking at our schedule, we've actually played 9 of the current top 10 teams in the state of Ohio. So definitely a strong schedule, to say the least.
Now, you've been on a tear of late. Last weekend, you seemed to really get it all going. You earned a 5-1 win over St. John's on Thursday, playing up at the Huntington Center. That had to be a treat for the guys playing in a pro arena and getting a win.
Yeah, it's the second time our program has done it, and there always just seems to be a little bit of jump in the team and excitement whenever we go to that facility. So it was definitely fun, a fun game to be a part of and fun to play in a facility like that.
Friday, it was a home win 2-0 over Perrysburg. Nice work by your team getting the shutout.
Yes, first shutout of the season. In fact, that was probably to date my the most fun I've had coaching the game, just because of the game itself was back and forth and a lot of excitement and just fun to be a part of.
What was it made the difference?
Well, I think we just the third period we had our legs and we got a couple nice goals from Sam Swisher and Brady Deliriwell, where they put the puck up top on their goalie, and it was just fun to be a part of. Good atmosphere.
Saturday, you had an explosion of scoring in a 9-5 win over Anthony Wayne. What was the story in that one?
We got off to an early start, and our confidence grew. Again, another fun game to be a part of, although I wasn't too excited about giving up 5 goals. But at the end of the day, I'll take the win all day long.
The regular season coming to an end, Friday you head up to Tam O'Shanter to meet St. Francis in a conference game. The Knights haven't lost in Red Division play, so this is going to be a good bit of work for your team.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a challenge. They are, they're loaded from top to bottom, from, their forwards through their goaltender. So definitely be a challenge for us and our team. But, they lace the skates up just like we do. And, the difference maker for us is we're going to outwork them. We know that. That's how we play. And we'll see what happens.
And Saturday, you host Bowling Green. Of course, that's the big rivalry for Findlay in hockey. They are 7-3 in the conference, you at 6-4, so you both have lots to play for. They topped you 4-1 when you played them earlier in the season on the road up at BGSU. It certainly would be great to carry over some of that momentum from this past weekend right through this into the tournament.
Absolutely. And looking at that game, it was tied 1-1 with, I believe, 5 or 6 minutes left. And they also scored an empty netter goal. And to be honest, I thought we outplayed them. They just got a few of the extra bounces than we did. But in looking at that game, it's all the pressure's on them. You know what I mean? So they've got the better record. They're the higher seed. But we're just going to go out and play our game. And on top of that, it's senior night. So that's just a little extra motivation for our seniors and our team as a whole. So it should be fun.
John Marshall with head coach Ben Patey talking Trojans hockey on the Court Coaches Corner earlier this week. Final weekend of the regular season, but a couple of really tough games to wrap up the regular season. St. Francis and Bowling Green, two of the higher seeded teams heading into the playoffs after this weekend. Trojans will open the hockey tournament next Friday versus either Troy or Beaver Creek at Tam O'Shanter, and then the winner of that game will meet Northview at BGSU the next evening. So we wish the Trojans hockey team all of the best this weekend.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
You have breaking news, and then you have the news that's already broken. And this is the broken news. Our dumb criminal of the day is the guy in Delaware, Seaford, Delaware, who apparently woke up one morning and just asked himself, how much trouble can I get into in one 24-hour period? In just one day, how much trouble can I get into? Roy Nichols is his name. A trooper stopped him after the license plates on his vehicle came back to a stolen car out of Pennsylvania. So that was number one. He allegedly showed signs of intoxication, and a search later found crack, cocaine, and heroin in the car, along with money from the proceeds of a drug sale. So in one traffic stop, this cop hit the mother load right there. Roy Nichols apparently woke up that day and asked himself, how much trouble can I get into in one day? Stolen vehicle, intoxicated driving, drug possession, and drug dealing, all in one traffic stop. Mr. Nichols was arrested without incident. Sometimes you just know when you're busted. You know, you okay, you got me. That is a bad day, but probably still as bad as Mr. Nichols' day was, still not as bad as the guy from West Bengal. This from the international file of the broken news, where a woman has been accused of selling her husband's kidney and then using the money to run off with her lover. Now that's a bad day right there. The woman reportedly convinced her spouse to put up his organ for sale on the black market, ostensibly to pay for their daughter's education. That was the story she gave. I'm going to pay for our daughter's education. But then once he sold his kidney, she took the $11,000 and eloped with someone she met on Facebook. Wow. That is a bad day right there. Sell your kidney and your wife uses the money to run off with some other man. Whew. Suddenly, the guy from Delaware who got into all that trouble with just a traffic stop, that doesn't seem such a bad deal. Let's see. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, this actually speaks to something that has been very much in the news today. This actually comes out of the Czech Republic, so another international story. In the Czech Republic, a group of beavers has naturally done what it took local authorities 7 years to do. They built a dam. A restoration project in a local nature park there in the Czech Republic has been in the works since 2018. The government finally gained the necessary permits and was prepared to start building, but they found their work had already been done by a group of beavers. But they're not upset The head of the Nature Reserve Administration says the beavers saved us 30 million Czech crowns. Equivalent about $30 million. They saved us 30 million bucks. They built the dams without any project documentation and for free. So, somebody call Elon Musk. That's what we need. We'll just lay off the Army Corps of Engineers and hire a bunch of beavers. Okay. Elsewhere in the broken news, again, from the international file, this is a doctor out of Italy who is now under investigation for saving the life of his cat. Let me tell you the story. Dr. Gianluca Finelli has a cat named Athena that recently took a really bad fall, fell six stories from the roof of an apartment building, and was seriously injured. The doctor quickly gathered his cat up and took her to the hospital, where he performed a CAT scan. The irony there is not the story. Did a CAT scan to see what kind of injuries he was dealing with there. And while the CAT scan likely saved the feline, prosecutors now say he could be charged with depriving patients of services because using the CAT scan machine to examine his cat when it's designed for people. Dr. Finelli says, in his defense, he used the equipment well after the day's scheduled tests were over, like 11 o'clock at night. So he didn't deprive anyone, but still authorities have him under investigation. He said, if my cat had died, I would have never been able to forgive myself, especially because my kids absolutely adore this family pet. The head of the hospital, one Massimo Uberti, says we are investigating all possible rule violations. So, man, what do they have against cats over there at the hospital? I mean, come on. Does seem like a bit of overkill there. And a couple of other items here in the broken news that relate to Valentine's Day right around the corner. The Memphis Zoo in Tennessee is giving fans the choice of being sweet or sour this Valentine's Day. For a $10 donation, you will have the option of either sending a cute red panda video to your sweetheart or a video of an elephant doing its business to an ex. So a cute red panda video for your loved one or elephant poo to a not-so-loved one. According to a message on the website posted by the zoo, if you have an ex that deserves a stinking surprise this Valentine, let an elephant do the talking. Each message will come with a digital card, and you can purchase your video now through February 12th. So, so you can go either way. They've got everybody covered this Valentine's Day. And not to be outdone, the Visalia Police Department in California also offering a unique Valentine's Day suggestion. Report an ex with outstanding felony warrants. You can turn in your ex for Valentine's Day in a social media post. The department shared a message, roses are red, violets are blue, your ex has felony warrants, call us, they'll never know it was you. They also are advertising an all-inclusive jail stay for that special or not-so-special someone in your life. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Super Bowl 59 is on Westwood One.
The Philadelphia Eagles are headed to New Orleans.
Now the Chiefs are on the doorstep of history.
going for a third consecutive Super Bowl.
Hi, everybody. I'm Scott Graham. Join Kevin Harlan, Kurt Warner, Laura Oakman, Gene Steratore, Devin McCourty, and me for all the action right here.
Sunday afternoon at 2, 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Super Bowl Sunday. And, you know, as Americans, we love food. We tie food into just about every event, but especially on Super Bowl Sunday, food is at the center of the celebration. And football fans are set to eat nearly 1.5 billion chicken wings for Super Bowl Sunday. 1.5 billion chicken wings. And that's kind of interesting. You know, the bird flu has culled the chicken population quite substantially. So I don't know what about the price of chicken wings and all of that, but the forecast from the National Chicken Council says this is the biggest time of year for wings. Sales go up 12% during the course of the NFL playoffs, culminated, of course, on Super Bowl Sunday. 12% jump in chicken wings this time of year. Now, if wings are not your thing, Sunday also happens to be National Pizza Day, and there are plenty of deals to be had on pizzas. But sticking with the food theme in general, which dishes are you making to share during the big game? Let's say you're having a party or you're going to a Super Bowl party. An analysis of keyword search data finds the most popular big game day food in each state. They broke this down state by state. And the number one most searched Super Bowl food in 29 states, buffalo chicken dip. So if the chicken wings aren't enough, buffalo chicken dip, you know, in addition to the 1.5 billion chicken wings, I guess we use the rest of the chicken in the dip. That is number one in 29 states, including Ohio. Buffalo chicken dip. Baked potatoes were a big hit in California, Montana, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington. So ranked second on the list. Baked potatoes, interesting. Fried green tomatoes and funeral potatoes were the top searched snacks in three states each to make third and fourth spots, to take third and fourth spots in the overall list. And poke bowls ranked number one in Florida and Hawaii to be number five on the list of top Super Bowl foods. The rest of the top 10, deviled eggs, which was number one in Alaska. Weirdos, deviled eggs, the Super Bowl. What do you think this is, Thanksgiving dinner? Sonoran hot dogs in Arizona was number one, and that was number seven overall on the list. Sonoran hot dogs, kind of a Southwest hot dog recipe. Garlic knots, which was number one in Colorado. Sopapillas was number one in New Mexico. If you never had sopapillas, oh my goodness, that is a delicious treat. And baked ziti, which was number one in New York. So those are the rest of the top 10 Super Bowl dishes for your big party. It is worth noting, by the way, that crawfish etouffee is the top Super Bowl dish in Louisiana, where this year's game is being held. So if you want to be authentic to New Orleans, since that's where the game is, you can look up that recipe for crawfish etouffee. I don't know what it is either, but that's, thank goodness for the internet. We can look it up. So what is on the menu for your Super Bowl gathering? Whether you're going to a party or hosting a party, or maybe it's you're just going to be
hanging out at home.
Hanging out at home. That's what I think we're going to do, right?
Yep,
we're just going to hang out. We've done, over the years, we've done all kinds of things.
Yeah.
We've gone to Super Bowl parties. We've hosted Super Bowl parties.
Yep.
And I think this year it may just be the two of us. We're going to be at home. But regardless of whether you have a bunch of people around or not, food is going to be at the center of the festivities.
Most
definitely. It doesn't matter whether
you've got commercials.
2 or 20 people going to be. Food is the centerpiece of the Super Bowl extravaganza.
Yes.
So
yes,
whatever that looks like to you. So with that in mind, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio with a collection of easy and delicious game day recipes.
Yep.
And these would be great for whatever kind of gathering. And if you are going to a party, this is perfect. If you're going to a party or you're hosting, you wonder, you know, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You could do wings. You can do pizza. You can do, you know, the buffalo dip and all of that. Yep. But if you want to do something a little bit different, we have a cheese tortellini pepperoni pizza casserole.
Yeah, and this will feed a crowd. So you can take this with you, or if you're having your party at your house, this will feed quite a few people. So,
cheese tortellini pepperoni
and
pizza
very
casserole.
Easy dump and go.
Okay.
So 1 20-ounce package of refrigerated cheese tortellini, 1 28-ounce jar of marinara sauce, 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, 1.5 teaspoons of Italian seasoning, 2 cups of shredded mozzarella cheese, 1 cup of sliced pepperoni, 1/2 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, salt and pepper to taste. So preheat your oven to 375 degrees. Cook the tortellini according to the package instructions until al dente, then drain and place in a large mixing bowl. Add the sauce, the garlic Italian seasoning to the tortellini and toss gently to coat. Pour half of the tortellini mixture into a greased 9x13-inch baking dish. Layer half of the pepperoni slices over the tortellini, then sprinkle with some mozzarella. Repeat the layers with the remaining tortellini, the pepperoni, and more mozzarella.
Kind of like you would do with a lasagna.
Yep.
Sort of thing.
Yep.
Okay.
Then top the casserole with some grated Parmesan cheese. Bake in your preheated oven for about 25 to 30 minutes or until the casserole is bubbly and the cheese is golden brown. Let it rest for 5 minutes. Slice and serve.
You're ready to go.
All right.
To go along with the cheese tortellini pepperoni pizza casserole, which is a mouthful, we have chicken bacon ranch stuffed bread.
Yes.
All right.
Another mouthful.
Yeah.
So
this is good stuff.
Yes. 1 16-ounce loaf of Italian bread if you want to make your own, or if you want to just go to the store and get one of the big fat ones. So 1 8-ounce container of chive and onion cream cheese. I have that at room temperature. 1 cup of ranch salad dressing, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1 teaspoon of onion powder, 3 cups of shredded cooked chicken, roughly chopped, 6 slices of bacon cooked and crumbled, 1/2 a sweet onion chopped, 3 cups of shredded Colby Jack cheese divided, and 1 tablespoon of butter melted. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Line a baking sheet with your parchment paper and a medium mixing bowl. Beat together the cream cheese, the ranch dressing, your garlic powder, onion powder until it's smooth. Fold in your chopped chicken, your bacon, your green onions, and 1 cup of the cheese until well combined. Then slice your Italian bread. Do like a V at the top. So don't go all the way through.
Yeah.
And do like a V. So you're making like a little
trough.
Yes.
There for your,
yes. So you're going to take that extra bread out, and then you're going to top the, then you're going to put your chicken mixture in that little trough, and then you're going to, take your remaining 1 cup of cheese and put that on sprinkle that on top, then brush it with your melted butter, and then you're going to cover it loosely with some foil so the bread doesn't get crispy.
Okay.
So do that, and then bake for 30 to 40 minutes until the bread is heated through and the cheese is melted and everything's yummy and gooey, and then remove the foil for the last 5 minutes, and let it bake just for 5 minutes or so, just to kind of crisp up.
Crisp up a little bit. Yeah.
But you don't want it to be hard.
Yeah.
So just let it crisp up a little bit and then let the bread rest for about 5 minutes, then slice and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, that right there, I'd take that. You can take everything else and just give me that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yes.
That's good stuff. And then if you need a dessert, something, you know, kind of munchy.
Yes, a munchy dessert.
For the Super Bowl party, sweet and salty puff corn.
Yes. So this is 2 5-ounce bags of popcorn snack. You can get that at Walmart or Meijer. 1 cup of butter, 3 tablespoons of water, 2 tablespoons of corn syrup, and 1 cup of sugar. So pour the corn puffs out into a large bowl. Grab a couple of large cookie sheets and line them with some parchment paper. Melt 1 cup of butter in a medium-sized saucepan over medium-high heat. Add your water, your corn syrup, and your sugar. Stir over medium-high heat until it turns golden brown, 8 to 10 minutes. Pour the sauce mixture over the caramel puffs and stir until evenly coated. Pour the corn puffs onto your 2 large baking sheets, and you're going to kind of thin that out so then it can cool completely, about 10 minutes or so, and then you're going to break it apart. And I like adding M&M's, mini M&M's to mine after it's cooled, and kind of let those stick to them also and have those to munch on with
so, just a little candy-coated puff corn.
Yeah. It's almost like a caramel corn, but without the kernels.
Yeah, and without the caramel per se. I mean, you got the corn syrup and sugar. It's not necessarily caramel per se, but it's got that sort of taste. So sweet and salty puff corn for munching during the game, along with the chicken bacon ranch stuffed bread and the cheese tortellini pepperoni pizza casserole. Those recipes are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right?
Yep.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook, and also linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.com. .net. You have your Super Bowl food, Super Bowl party foods all covered for you. Next week, by the way, we've got Valentine's Day recipes. So good.
We're actually on Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Be on Valentine's Day on Friday. We've got some recipes that you can try. So look forward to that. In the meantime, again, follow Kyra's Kitchen on Facebook at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN. And again, it's all linked up at goodmornings.net. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Once again, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, we will recap the Battle of the Brands, rating the best commercials of Super Bowl 59. Once again, we'll check in with folks from the Spot Bowl. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out, make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.